is the 1895 podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello, finally we are back. The 1895 podcast returns after a brief hiatus. Mostly my fault, to be fair. I thought I was playing it safe by taking holidays after the league season finished. How silly I was. The Reds went and qualified for the group stages of the Conference League. But look, we'll get to that. We'll cover manic couple of weeks. Most importantly, we'll be looking forward to this huge fixture with fourth place defending FA Cup champions Crystal Palace. And I'm going to do it all with the other Cleary. Darren, hello, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Duty. Thanks for having me. Isn't that what we say at this juncture?
Yeah, you're supposed to anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've passed the first bit.
Well, look, it'll only go downhill from here.
How's the last couple of weeks been in Shelburne world, Dazzler? Obviously, we've been all quiet, as I say. That's mostly my fault. But how are things? What shape are we in?
Well, we're in bad shape because you went away on holidays and no one decided to do a podcast. So it's fair to say we completely let you down. So our first port of call is apologies to the listeners of the 1895 podcast who might have expected some kind of resumption or continuation of service during the post-season foray into Europe, which hasn't happened because it turns out Duty was the glue that holds us all together.
Oh, jeez, don't say that. God's sake. Things hanging on by a hair.
Just about, whatever hair you have left. No, it's been great. It's been a good few weeks. Like the pre-match press conference as we speak, it's Wednesday evening. The pre-match press conference was on earlier and there's a good upbeat mood. I think we've acquitted ourselves well and we probably do have a bit of a hard luck story. We deserve more points than we have and that's probably a better place than been sitting here at 1 point and saying, yeah, to be fair, we're where we should be. So tomorrow is a little bit of a, I know it's a terrible term and players and staff don't like it, but it's a free hit because everyone will expect Palace to roll in here and win comfortably. They'll probably expect that as well. They've been talking up this evening at the press conference how hard it'll be for us. We're off season, their peak season, they're flying it, we're not. So the pressure is completely off. You go to a game, you lose the game, no one really bats an eyelid. You go to the game, you give a good account to yourself, and it's I think it's one of those things that can bring you on a long way. There's two ways to lose in Europe, one that brings you together or one that changes your thinking.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years kind of been ingrained in us to stay away from the moral victory. That's definitely continued this year as well. But as you say there, this one, even when the draw was done, it was like, this felt like a standalone game. The rest of them were all kind of, maybe Alkmaar away, similar. But I think the way the campaign's gone so far, there is zero pressure on this one tomorrow. I think it's, as you say, don't like using the term, but free hit is probably the best way to describe it. It just feels very weird. It's like we've been so competitive in every game and even going to Alkmaar, I think people from around the league probably would have thought we were going to take a bit of a pasting over there. Far from it. Gave an amazing account of ourselves. Definitely a performance to be proud of. So does that Alkmaar game kind of open up this one a little bit tomorrow and you say, look, well, if we're similar, if we're solid, you know, there's so much talk around Troy Parrott. He quite literally didn't get a sniff in the Netherlands. Does that Alkmaar performance give us a bit of confidence? Is probably a strange word to use going into a game against Crystal Palace, but gives us something to hang on to, surely.
It's probably the biggest game we've ever played in terms of the opposition that we're playing, like the FA Cup holders, flying high in the Premier League, massive players, massive wage bill. Like, I know obviously people look back and they'll see Deportivo in 2004 and they'd been to the Champions League semi-final the year before. I would say, and maybe it's a mad call, but I'd say Palace are a bigger club overall than Deportivo were at that time, particularly now in English football and the Premier League and the strength of that league and the quality of it. So It's not the biggest game we've had because stakes wise, I think we're out of the running effectively from progressing. So, but it's an opportunity to create maybe a result or a moment that will live long beyond the campaign and a standalone single thing. And you do so without having any expectations. Palace's approach to this game is business only. Like, they rocked into the press conference this evening. They didn't bother coming to have the traditional look around. It was the player and the manager, the rest of the team. They landed at 5:30. They came to the stadium at, 7:00. They got back on their bus. They're not staying tomorrow night. They are rolling in and rolling out and expecting to do so by getting 3 points in this competition. So I don't think that's a sign of disrespect, but it's a sign that they probably think this is going to be their easiest game that they'll play all season.
They should expect that, though, I think. Out of all the games they've played, even in this competition so far, they played Strasbourg, obviously doing really, really well in the French League. They played Alkmaar themselves. They played and lost to Larnaca. This definitely, obviously, 100%, this was the one on their calendar of the fixtures where they said, yeah, there's a 3 points guaranteed. Don't really need to worry about that one. And I think the way the fixtures have panned out for them, their last two games are probably their two handiest. So I'm not surprised with the roll-in, roll-out attitude. If I was a Palace fan, I'd probably be thinking the exact same way. A point was made to be earlier. Is there another glimmer of hope there? They're obviously coming into this typically busy Christmas period in the Premier League. You're playing games every kind of 3 days. It's manic, it's hectic. I would be expecting them to rotate tomorrow. I know Mateta, who'd probably be the main man, hasn't even travelled. He's carrying a knock, but I see him there tonight. Ollie Glasner said in his press conference that, yeah, we've left Mateta at home, but hopefully he'll train Friday and be available for the weekend. So that would probably show you how confident they are that their squad players, if you like, can just rock in. But am I just being a supreme optimist now, looking at it going, well, maybe there might be a little bit of something there. You might catch them a little bit dopey. Am I being too optimistic? Are people listening to me now going, ah, shut up, you dope, will you? Just get on with it.
No, actually.
Well, I usually probably say that anyway, but go on.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. If you're ever going to catch them cold, it's this game. It's this game where they're looking and they're thinking, yeah, we've got a massive ball ache of a fixture list coming up around Christmas, New Year's, Boxing Day, Stephen's Day, whatever. This is one where we should just go in and, be businesslike, get our result and get out of there. If we concede, we're toast. If we score first, I think we have a chance of getting a good result. I think our European group has been hallmarked by leaving chances behind and then leaving results behind. The margins, the quality, how tight the games have been. If you don't score first, I think it's very, 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 very difficult to win in this competition, and we haven't scored at all. So that's the big test. If we can bring the defensive display, and look, that was something I was at the press conference and that was something we highlighted. They're defensively strong. They're very well organized, blah, 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 blah. All the things, platitudes people say about Chelsea. But he didn't have anything to say about us having any kind of attacking threat. So if we can give them a bloody nose, for want of a better word, early on, grab a goal, well, I think that makes it a very, very interesting game. And I absolutely, every game we've watched this season that I thought maybe we're in for a Zurich here, Zurich away, where we conceded after a few seconds and took a bit of a pace, and none of them have transpired. Even Carabeg, the scoreline doesn't look right, but the performance home and away was so much closer, and bar for two massive brain farts and mix-ups at the back, I think that's, a very, very tight game, maybe the odd goal in each leg. So if there's any time we'd catch them dopey or cold, it's this. And in a weird way, I could look really stupid at 10 o'clock tomorrow night if they come in and they look up for it, but it looks like they just don't want to be here. And they want to get in and get out and be done with it.
See, that thing of they don't want to be here, they do just want to just get in, get out as quickly as possible, that would worry me a bit. Because are they just going to come out, is the whole thing going to be, come here, we go in, first half an hour, we're at it, we go 2-0 up within half an hour, the job is done. the job's a good one, you know. But then, like, you have to, I'd have this battle, I've been battling this in my head all day. If they do that way, does that suit us? Because you might catch them dopey going the other way then, where they might be a little bit.
We're not scoring 2 goals against them, dude, or 3 goals against them. Not when we've scored no goals.
No, I'm not saying us scoring against them. I'm saying they will come out of traps, try and hit us for 2 or 3 early on, and then the game's over, done with.
Yeah.
But would that help us? Do you know what I mean? If they are open early, a little bit gung-ho, a little bit, come on, let's just go get the tie finished with. Does that suit us?
No, because they have the quality to score 2 or 3 goals. So I'd rather it was a little bit cagey and ugly and a little bit like how Alkmaar was, where they were living off fumes and we didn't look like we were backs against the wall. So if we looked pretty comfortable in the game. I think if they come out and want to blow you away, I think they have the quality to do it. Yeah.
It's probably dinosaur stuff for me, but is there a touch of the, like, no, Paddy Barrett goes and cleaves somebody after 5 minutes. Then, I don't know, maybe Kerr or somebody goes and does similar. Do you think you could rattle them? Like, can they be rattled, a team of that quality, playing at the level they're playing at? Can that kind of stuff work, do you think?
I think so. I absolutely think you can rattle any team. I thought it was very funny, like, Tala is the best ground in the country in Ireland, and I overheard one of the Palace people talking to another, I'm not sure who they were or what their involvement was, but they weren't involved with Palace, and they were saying, yeah, it's a quaint old ground, isn't it? It's about talent. And I was like, very, you know, this is the most modern thing we have, we bring it to Talca. And but yeah, look, I do get the sense that you'll know after 15 minutes what kind of game it'll be. I think how we start, how they start, will tell you a lot. I would just hope that we continue to, there'll be more eyes on this than any other game. So this will be the defining game in the public's view. Everyone will forget about how close we were to getting results in the other games. The brilliant result we got away from home in Rijeka, going through Linfield twice to get into the group stage. That'll all be forgotten by the general football public, the good Barstool football fans and sports fans in this country. So I just hope that whatever happens, we give the version of ourselves that actually supports what we've been this year, which has been, on our day, a very, very, very good team that are not far away from being the best team in this country.
You've put that so well. Another way of putting it is probably, have we been the ultimate hard luck story in Europe this year? Like, has there been a more hard luck story for a League of Ireland club in Europe?
We drew Linfield twice, so I think we
used I'm talking after that. I'm more talking the league phase, like if you just isolated the league phase on its own.
I actually asked Joey that question today in the pre-match, and his answer was really interesting. He just wouldn't have it. Like, it was an easy soundbite to say, we've had, you know, luck hasn't been our side. He said, you make your own luck. We're creating chances. We're creating really good chances. It's not luck that they don't go in. It's quality. And I thought it was a real, you know, signal of his standards and what he expects, and also not reverting to cliches or excuses. And I think, like, the job Joey's done is unbelievable. Like, he was thrust into this role in the most, I suppose, like, the most difficult of circumstances. Like, it's a job maybe you would have liked to have somewhere down the line, but never probably even had a chance to think about it. Then he's doing it, and he's doing it brilliantly, like genuinely doing it brilliantly. And he speaks so well, and he's finding his feet, and he's been brilliant since coming in. But his mindset is properly elite. And, you know, we probably could bemoan our luck so far. But he doesn't. He says, no, it's a lack of quality. We haven't done enough to get those results. So we can call ourselves unlucky, but the chances we've been missed, there's no luck involved in them. It's quality.
You mentioned there about what good a job the manager's done since he's come in. Me and Ben have been the same. We've sang his praises every chance we've gotten, particularly around the European stuff. Like, there's an awful lot out of the ordinary when it comes to these European games, especially the away ones. So an awful lot of decisions to be made there that maybe not football related, but they definitely then affect how the football is played, like just stuff around scheduling things and like where to stay, when you arrive, do we want to fly in and fly out? No, we want to stay the night one, do this, that and the other. Like, I've been lucky enough to be in Alkmaar. Like, I think we've gotten it right as a club this year, and that's stuff that will go totally under the radar. Again, the general public probably won't pay much attention to it, but we've definitely gotten, I would say, 90% of the things right so far since Joey's come in, and that end of it as well doesn't get enough credit. But I heard somebody, or seeing somebody, it's probably on Twitter, because Twitter's just a fucking cesspit, but somebody said, it was along the lines of, oh, like, you know, they dropped off a couple of levels when Joey O'Brien took over in terms of, like, a reputation stuff. You'd swear Joey O'Brien was, like, some random Leinster Senior League footballer. I only looked up, because just out of interest, I looked up Joey's record against Palace, or, you know, did he ever do anything memorable against Palace as such? Joey's had a serious career. It's almost like people are surprised he knows what he's talking about sometimes. I struggle to wrap my head around that. Like, Joey played at the top level for a long time and played for some big classic Barclays clubs at the time, i.e. Bolton. So, yeah, we shouldn't be surprised.
Who said that? Like, what a stupid thing.
I obviously wouldn't like it. It's easy to follow up if you like it. I think I might have added it to my collection or something so I could follow up on it. I'll have a look in a minute. Look, this one with Palace, obviously, it's the glamour tie. It's the big one, blah, blah, blah. The campaign as a whole, do we look back now on, obviously, the other two home games, Hacken and Drita in particular? Like, are they near disasters now to look back on?
Yeah, they are, because we could have won them and should have won them. And I think, like, in one way, it's nearly easier if you're completely outclassed and you don't compete and you don't get within an arse's roar of getting a result. But it's always harder when you don't do well. But I do think that the way this campaign has gone, there's more good than bad to take from it. The fact we haven't been outclassed, the fact that we have moved on from Zurich. I don't know if people realise, but Zurich was a real watershed moment for the team and the growth of the football side, because it probably changed the approach to be that kind of comprehensively, you know, brushed aside so quickly. Like, a lot of things changed off the back of that. Like, you know, some of the recruitment, some of the tactical stuff was all influenced around, well, how do we make sure we don't have that happen to us again? Because it wasn't just a bit of bad luck out in Zurich. It was like deer in the headlights stuff, completely outclassed by a stronger, fitter, physical, more athletic team. So what do we do? And that hasn't happened since. And we've played really good teams. Like, Carabag are a proper team. Alkmaar are a proper team. Crystal Palace will be a proper team. We don't know what we'll see. But I think what's been difficult is when you're that competitive and when you're that close, you just... You'd love to, even if we had one win, or one win and another draw, you'd say, yeah, you know, that's not too bad. First time ever. Bit greedy, probably. Like, don't forget, when Dundalk and Rovers got to group stages for the first time, I think they ended both their first campaigns with no points, if I'm not mistaken.
It's, yeah, I know what you're saying. It doesn't take a whole lot to give yourself a chance in this kind of format. And that's why I think the Hacking one doesn't bother me so much. The conditions were horrific. It was our first time in Talla for a game, so I'm sure that was a little bit strange. It was just, that was a weird, weird game. The crowd was a bit flat because of the weather and blah, blah, blah. So that, the draw with Hacking doesn't really, it's the Drita one. That's the one that I think we look back on and say, wow, how? And considering, like, they're looking good now to go straight through, to not even have to go through a playoff.
It's mental, isn't it? And look,
it's bizarre.
The Skenda game as well, like, that was a game we never should have been losing. The red card obviously changes things against Drita, and it does have a massive influence. Like, Doody, I think with 11 men, we beat them. I think we beat them comfortably.
Yeah, well, we certainly should have done, I think. I think the red card ended up being a bit of a, oh, well, look, we were a little bit... even though it was a red card, you're kind of looking at it going, well, yeah, maybe a little bit unlucky, a little bit unlucky.
It's a red card in VAR.
We're not doing this again. We haven't done this enough tonight.
We haven't done it, right? We haven't done it. So let me just say, it's a red card when you slow it down and look at it from nine angles. You, and I was sitting beside you, it was right in front of us. We didn't even think it was a free at the time, Beauty.
No, but the very first replay I saw, I went, oh yeah, that's probably a red actually. So you're saying about slowing it down, watching it six or seven times. It took once for me to watch it again. And
well, your eyes don't lie to you, Duty. Right in front of you, in real time. Like, you couldn't have been closer to it. You were 10 feet from it with a perfect line of sight. You said, ah, come on, not even a free.
But this is the table we dine at now, Dazzler.
Yeah.
Where VAR is a thing. And I, for the record, I absolutely despise it. I really do, whether it's helping us or not. Has it helped us?
It's fucked us. Keir McEnroy.
Yeah.
It's shafted us.
Poor Davey Mack got shafted out of one of the greatest set-piece goals this club's ever scored.
Yeah. Justice for Davey Mack.
Yeah, look, we obviously haven't talked about Alkmaar either. Like, that was another one where it was a bit of a blur for me. I didn't really get a chance. I don't really feel like I enjoyed that trip as well as I should have done. I was only back from my own holidays and it was a bit kind of hectic and manic, but there's another, it's another one of those moments you have, myself, yourself and Reggie, we're sitting in the dugout as we usually do, kind of way before the teams even come out to warm up, kind of looking around going, this is just incredible. Like, what are we doing here? And I try so hard not to get caught up in that mentality, in that mindset. But just Alkmaar in general was just, I went down to the fan zone the day of just to see if anyone needed a dig out, giving out tickets or anything of the sort. And I've never seen so many happy people in one place. It was just this bizarre. Now, look, it's also very close to Amsterdam, which probably helped in that regard. But like, are we taking these for granted at the minute, do you think? Is there a sense of that? I think there is a little bit for me. I think we very quickly settled into this European thing of like, yeah, it's a bit manic, you know, Thursdays, you know, it's just Thursday is the European day now. You kind of, you do settle into it. You're obviously getting snowed out of it with, you know, match day minus one, media stuff, and there's an awful lot of hoops to jump through for these European games. But is it one of them things we might look back on maybe in a year or two if we're not playing the league phase and go, oh, geez, we didn't enjoy that enough.
1,000,000%. Like, there's a famous line in The Office uttered by a man named Andy Bernard, and he said, I wish people would tell you you're in the good old days when you're in them so you can appreciate them a bit more. And it definitely resonates with me because these are what in 10 years' time or 20 years' time you'll be calling the good old days. They're core memories, I think, is the phrase that the young people use today. And they should be enjoyed because I think because they're so close to how the grim days were, it's more stark and more real because things were very, very bad and not too long ago. So you have to enjoy them. And it does feel a bit surreal to be in the position we're in. I think that as well, like, it's not a loser mentality to think, well, look, we've gone to games. We haven't been completely outclassed. We are going away thinking we deserved more from that. We could have done a bit better, but we've given a good account of ourselves. I'm happy with that because I know that if we get into this position next year, we'll be a year better off. We'll be stronger recruitment-wise, squad-wise. We'll be older, more mature, a bit more street-wise, I think. And if we play those games, the likes of your Drita, your Hacken, your Shenda again, I don't think they end the way they do. So I think a bit like Zurich was a very, very formative moment for this group away from home, I think this campaign will be formative in this group over the next 3 or 4 years. And maybe the mistakes or the naiveties that have prevented us from picking up more points this year, they're lessons that you have to learn. And everyone always says you have to lose one to win one and all that. I genuinely believe that there's a lot of substance to that, because had we not have had the experience we had in Zurich in that first leg, I don't think we would have been as well equipped to get into a European group stage this year around.
100%. You're 100% right. You said earlier about how important that Zurich game has been for everything that's happened since. Hadn't really thought of it that way just till you said it, but I remember, and you would have remembered as well, after the game, there was, like, people were disappointed, but it was one of them kind of, ah, look, they were stronger, they were faster, they were technically better than us, not really much else we could have done. But I remember talking to, like, specific people after it, and they were like, oh, we were just, like, you're concentrating on controlling the ball, but one of them has already nicked it off you. By the time you've even thought about your second touch, the ball's already gone. And the same thing, if you're going to close a player down, you're trying to get after their first touch, and already they've taken two touches past you and they're gone. Like, that really was a massive moment for the football club, that Zurich game, because as you said, I think that instilled a real, like, oh, no more, we're not going to be that, you know, team from a small country that goes and gets battered in Europe. It's just not going to happen. And it hasn't happened since.
No, and look, it's funny, exactly what you said there, like, you're playing a team that's stronger than you, fitter than you, more athletic than you, more technically gifted than you. We had that in Alkmaar, but it was a completely different game, and it's much, much tighter. And I think if John Martin scores, do we win that game? Potentially. I definitely think we get something out of the game. I think we come away with at least a point. So we're now able to play teams that are all the things that Zurich were, like you said, technically better, fitter, stronger, more athletic, and more technical, but we're able to compete. And I think that the experience of this year, as maybe as missed an opportunity as it might be to get into the knockout stage, it will be a massive learning that you take forward. And the good thing I'll say is the mistakes we had in that Zurich game, either, you know, the wider kind of setup or how we were equipped to go into Europe against big teams, were not repeated. And I think the mistakes we made in the group stage this year wouldn't be repeated again.
Here's hoping. Look, the campaign obviously isn't over yet. We've still got two games to play. What's been your favourite thing that's happened so far? Over the whole qualifying, the whole lot, what's been, like, if you think of this European run now, what do you think of?
I definitely think of Linfield. I think of blowing Linfield away. I think that was such a Shells game to fuck up. And in years gone by, you'd be saying, right, we're going into this game with a lead. You're fancy to beat them here. This could be a real Hibs of Malta stuff. And we just put in the most business-like performance. We completely blew them away. And that was special because it showed that we could do that. We could move up the levels. I think Alkmaar, in a weird way, seeing so many Shells fans there, like, it's probably maybe the second biggest travelling support a League of Ireland club has ever brought to Europe. Amazing. Genuinely amazing. Like, there's been little moments, like, obviously getting to spend them with my brother, yourself, Reggie, people who've really been there for the doldrums and the bad days, to have those memories and those little moments of seeing how far it's come, and obviously to be around it and get a front row seat is a beautiful privilege as well. So I don't know if I have one particular moment, but I remember that first one against Hacken and coming out around the tunnel close to kickoff, and the music plays and you're thinking, Jesus, this is like a video game. Like, I used to not play Europe at Shells or FIFA a few years ago because getting them into a UEFA competition was like, ah, come on, fantasy stuff, never going to happen. Being more realistic. So yeah, that was pretty magical, to be honest.
And look at us now. I never thought I'd say it, but the Conference League / Europa League song now has a special place for me.
Very special place.
That's class.
So does the little badge as well. A little black and green badge. Never thought about green badge as much.
Yeah, true. My standout, my brain just always goes back to it when I think of Europe this year. It was Rijeka, the away game. John Martin's header. It was just, the whole kind of experience was just mental. Not only, we stayed in one of the most beautiful little towns I've ever been in my life. So that was class enough. Then being asked to commentate on the game was unbelievable. Being able to commentate on John Martin's goal was just insane. People hanging from the fucking away end, literally hanging from the rafters. Unbelievable. That John Martin goal will just stay with me forever. Unbelievable stuff. But look, hopefully, we're talking here on Wednesday night, hopefully somebody pops up with something magical against Palace and we get another one of them moments. Look, kind of nearly had a European review there as such. Look, there's been loads of other stuff going on, as we mentioned. So we haven't been here for so long. It feels like nearly a whole season has gone by. We had the Player of the Year Awards, that's the in-house ones. You were there, I think you were MC for the night, were you?
Yeah, everyone else was busy and probably expensive. So, no, all jokes aside, I was delighted to get to host it. It was a genuine honour. It was the first time the women's and the men's team were brought together for the awards. A brilliant step forward. Like, there was a time where players would get these things in the post because they'd probably be long gone by the time the awards were handed out. So the club is going in such a good direction on and off the pitch. Credit to Neil Doyle, to Moss Quinn, everyone involved in putting it together. It was a brilliant awards night in the Grand Hotel in Malahide, bringing together pretty much all the first team squad, a lot of the women's squad, and handing out awards. So it'll grow year to year. It's got bigger as we've gone. And yeah, look forward to seeing how it'll go next year. The choices, duty probably a bit divisive, maybe.
The winners.
Yeah.
I can't say I looked at any of those award like winners and went, ah, I don't know about that one.
Ah, dude.
Well, you're alluding to something here.
How has Mackenzie Anthony scored 15 or 16 goals and not got anything? And how has Harry Wood been our best player this year and not got anything?
Well, who votes for these things, Dazzler?
Players.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Actually, someone had a little pop. Fucking media team giving out awards. We didn't get a vote.
Who said that?
I got a comment or reply to the Shell's account when we put up the winners.
I only got a last minute invite to the Epoxy Awards ceremony, so I definitely didn't get an invite or didn't get a say on who won it. That's an outrageous claim to make.
Yeah, but I suppose they probably think because the awards originated on the podcast and maybe they're the podcast awards, but the way they've been done is they've effectively taken the role as the player's player of the year under the guise of the 1895 award. So they're voted for by the players. And yeah, it was interesting. There was a couple of comments and replies about them. You can't disagree or argue. Like, players will have a unique thing because they see them beyond a Friday night. But for me, your Player of the Year award's probably doing an impact on the pitch on a Friday night, isn't it?
Yeah, but look, as I say, Harry maybe, yeah, I think that's probably the fairest argument to make. Just anyone that didn't or hasn't seen them, the men's and women's players of the year were Kerr McInroy and Jess Gargan. And then the young players of the year were James Norris and Avian Clancy either side. Chuck, of course, not able to be there to receive his award. I've seen he popped up in a training squad there with Liverpool recently enough. So we've probably seen the last of Chuck Norris, have we?
Yeah, he's obviously suspended for these games. So there's no point keeping him around the building. Loan's expired back in Liverpool, as far as I know, but I only saw that on a Liverpool fan page, so he's not around the place. So yeah, you'd imagine that that's one that might have seen the last of.
Shame. A great shame. Chuck's a great fella. Couldn't understand a word he said now, mind you.
Like, he had a brilliant year. He did like a little video to, you know, thanks for winning, and similar enough, he sent it on to me and I was thinking, should I put subtitles on this?
Oh yeah, I think I could interview somebody speaking Mandarin and understand them better than Chuck talking. That's Scouse accent. I just can't do it.
Poor Chuck.
Cannot do it. Obviously, it's a strange thing with the European campaign extends the season on. You're probably not going to be much transfer activity, I wouldn't have thought, on the men's end of things. Just with, like, you're still playing, it's awkward. Like, really risking upsetting the apple cart. I think if you start bringing players in now at this point, if you even can, I don't know what the rules are around that. I'd imagine if you're going to see anything, it's going to be after January, it's pretty fair to say.
As the great Ollie Byrne would say, upsetting the apple tart. Yes, Ollie, no one wants to upset the apple tart. Yeah, like it's a nice thing that we've moved to a point where we don't hemorrhage 10, bring in 10 every year. I think it's, you'll never move forward until you actually build year to year and you can have long-term planning and kind of build your squad over multiple windows and multiple years. It's what's been really successful for Rovers. It's what's allowed them the ability to probably take a bit of a stranglehold on the league over the last few years. And it's a good way of doing things. Now, I think some football fans nowadays are so obsessed with the, you know, Sky Sportsification of football that they just, they get more excited by transfers than they do about football. Like, there's genuinely some people that seem more enthused by a player being announced as coming to sign for Shelbourne than Kerr McEnroy's last minute Dublin Derby winner in Daily Mount. I find that mad. I find this kind of, like, people will DM the club every day and say, any news on signings? As if I'm going to write back to Paul OM 54 and say, yeah, Paul, we're actually, believe it or not, Graham Burke has been signed. Don't tell anyone till we get him down to talk and do the pictures.
The DMs of the official club accounts are a very murky water. I remember doing I think it was the only one that went down. It was a pre-season friendly in Cork a couple of years ago. I think it was the last pre-season game before the season kicked off. It was bitter cold and I had to do match updates on Twitter, so I was lashing away doing that and the DMs start rolling in, and my god, how the people that have access to that Shell's Twitter account don't bite at some of the stuff, I will never know. There's not a hope I could do it. Mental, absolutely mental stuff, some of it.
The best one is the people who lose bets, because they say the wildest stuff in the world, like stuff they'd be sent to prison for. Like, that's probably borderline illegal. Like, and you can always tell that it's because they've lost the bet, because it will never be one message. It'll be a stream of messages over the course of the last 5-10 minutes of the game where it's becoming clear that it's not going to end their way. There's a special place in hell for those people.
We talked about Alkmaar, we talked about the occasion. That what we didn't mention was 64 appearances in UEFA competition for one Sean Gannon. Probably one of the most underrated signings the club's ever made, I would say. But yes, an incredible achievement. 64 European appearances, unbelievable.
It's genuinely amazing. It's brilliant. It's such a milestone, and you'd genuinely be happy for who has it, who has that record. He's a classy fella, Sean Gannon, and as good as he is on the pitch, he's probably even better off the pitch as a person. So genuinely delighted for him. What a record. Like, it's mad to think he's played so many games with Rovers and so many games with Dundalk, but yet he just feels like he's been at Talca 10 years.
It is weird, isn't it, that he's like, he fit in so quickly. It was like like he'd been playing here his whole career. But usually with people like that, and I remember saying this when we signed Sean originally, when you have, like, Dundalk supporters wouldn't think particularly highly of us, obviously neither would Rovers, and the outpour of them being genuinely happy for him, you know, that you'd signed for somebody, and the disappointment that they had lost him, that always speaks volumes, I find. You would have had the opposite experience this year with Milan's former supporters, but I think it speaks a lot.
Wait till you see.
Oh, I loved it. It's just completely insane. But they're another fucking, I don't know.
For anyone who isn't a regular listener, we got some correspondence from Cork after Milan and Beng signed, and it sounded like a jilted lover who saw, you know, someone else kissing their person they fancied at Wes circa 2004 and went home and wrote a big long Bebo status about it. And there's snakes everywhere and a leopard never changes his spot. And you'll see what they're really like. It was unhinged stuff.
Oh, it's just full of weapons, isn't it? Just the whole league. It's just mental. It's absolutely mad. Look, we've mentioned Gano. Probably can't mention Gano without mentioning Dickey. And Dickey signs a contract extension. Another one who I think goes under the radar sometimes, but really, really happy to see him tied up. Tied up's probably the wrong way to phrase that, but Dickey's hanging around, and so he should be, because particularly in these European games, he's been so effective. Had a difficult start with his injury, but another fella who it's just like he's been here forever. Awards, it just seems to be awards everywhere. There's so many different types of awards, isn't there? Everyone has their own different ones, but Paddy obviously was in the PFAI Team of the Year. One Paddy Barra, who I seen him tweeting earlier on about UEFA uploaded a clip. Did you see this?
No.
Of the perfect pass. It was from the Alkmaar game. That lad that plays midfield for Alkmaar played this. Now, it was an amazing ball in behind their defence. And they square it, and Paddy like arrives at the front post and clears it. And Paddy quote tweeted it and said, yeah, the pass was good, but the clearance was even better. Something along those lines. So,
he really is an icon.
He's mental. Pat, another one though, well deserving of his place in that Team of the Year. Just a rock. He's rock solid. I was personally hoping to see him kick lumps out of Jean-Philippe Mateta, but we won't be graced with his presence on Thursday, unfortunately. Kate Mooney and Amanda McQuillan as well. Kate Mooney winning Gold of the Year for the League of Ireland Women, and Amanda, of course, Golden Glove. Kerga Player of the Month since we've been here last. Loads of stuff going on. And of course, we've gotten this far and haven't mentioned Sean Russell.
And New Jersey. We've loved New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey's new training gear. It's all go. It's all go.
It's been a while since you've done a podcast.
That's shocking, really. The I like the jerseys. I'm a big fan, I have to say. The away one looked very, very slick in Alkmaar. I'm looking forward to seeing the home one now on Thursday. The new training gear, I think, has caused a bit of debate among people.
Oh yeah? What are the people debating?
Whether it's nice or not.
Oh well, look, it's the eternal debate, isn't it? Like, it's what I will say is it's good to have O'Neills who do quality stuff that doesn't look generic and doesn't look crap and lasts from one end of the season to the other. I think I'm from the Shells days where we used to prit stick on crests onto Macron clothing. And I mean, you wash that at any degree and it's gone. So
yeah, you need to take it down to the river and hit it with rocks. It's the only chance you have.
Yeah.
Sean Russell, new women's manager, Dazzler. Surprised? Fitting appointment? Where do you stand?
A good appointment. Obviously, it brings experience of the league. Obviously, with the work he did at Treaty, will have his own way of doing things, finding his feet in the league. Played with Shells, so kind of knows the club, comes from a strong stock in terms of his own playing career. It's an interesting appointment. I think it's one that will definitely energize, revitalize that group. It's a bit of a weird one, but by their own standards, they'll be massively disappointed to not have won the league for a few years, to not have won any silverware this year. Like, for a long time, this was the team that drove the standards and were the best team in the country, were the envy of everyone else in what was the WNL at the time, is now the Women's League of Ireland, and we're the team trying to get back there. So obviously, Sean has that ambition to do it. He knows it, what's expected of Shelbourne Football Club in the women's game, and he's ready to embrace it. So I think it's a brilliant appointment, very interesting appointment, and he's already shaking things up a bit, fair to say.
Yeah, look, he's kind of made a few re-signings kind of straight away. Obviously, Pearl, Jess Gargan, Alex Kavanagh, Avian Clancy, Rachel Graham, Lucy O'Rourke, Kate Mooney, and Nia Hannan all signed on again for next year. And probably the departures probably caught people more off guard. So Rowan McLaughlin obviously has left the club, Megan Smith Lynch, Amanda McQuillan, the Golden Glove winner, Courtney Maguire, and probably the most talked about one, Noel Murray. That definitely has to go down as a bit of a surprise, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's always surprising because, you know, those players are part of the furniture at Talca, you know, especially when you talk about Amanda and Noel, they're part of the fabric and the DNA of that team over the last decade. You probably never expect they'll ever leave, but it's real life, it's football, and the journey ends somewhere at some time. Like, you have to say, like, they owe nothing to nobody. What they've done for Shells, Noel Murray is probably one of the most gifted players I've ever seen at Talca Park, men or women. Like, what she could do with the ball at her feet, the vision, some of the goals she scored, absolutely outrageous. Like, properly outrageous. And Amanda as well, brilliant goalkeeper, won the keeper of the year. Roma, obviously, injury interrupted. Megan Smith Lynch the same. And Courtney probably just hasn't had an opportunity to get a run at the team. So they're big calls, but you'd rather a manager who's going to come in and make big calls than just leave things as they are. I think the big calls are, like, departures always come first in football. You figure out who's leaving your squad with a view to who's coming in. So I think that's going to be the really interesting part, who will be brought in. And I think, you know, there'll be snap decisions and snap judgments made on players leaving, and that's understandable. Fans will obviously be very emotional about their favourite player leaving the football club. It's not easy for them or for the player. But I think the fairest thing to do would be to judge those decisions when you know all of them, because right now you know one piece of the puzzle, who's going, but you don't know who's coming. So I think before anyone makes any grand pronouncements on the manager, see what he has up his sleeve.
Yeah, I tend to remember a similar thing happening when, maybe to a lesser extent, Mikey O'Connor, but certainly when Ryan Brennan was let go, as soon as Damien Duff came through the door, there was big kind of questions around that one. Look, managers live and die by their decisions, ultimately, and you're not going to know whether they're good or bad decisions until this time next year when the dust settles on the season. So, as you say, it's an exciting time. You don't know who's coming in to fill those boots, so let's see where we end up. Dazzler, before we go...
But there is, dude, it's like, there's no fairy tale endings in football. I think that was the thing that probably was a bit surprising about a lot of the kind of discourse around this last week, is that, like, this expectation that, you know, everything has a neat end. It doesn't in any kind of elite sport. You know, you don't always get the end that you deserve or that you want. And that's kind of sport. Like, you look at Luke Byrne, captain Shells in a cup final, captain Shells to promotion, was involved, you know, centrally in another promotion, and then retired, had to retire because there was no kind of playing future really for him at Shells. So, like, that wouldn't have been nice, but I think he'll admit himself that that's football. The flip side is as well, and, you know, if a player is coming towards the end of their career, is it not fair to let them have an opportunity to play more often if they're not going to be a big part of the plans? And you'd imagine if the players are being let go, they wouldn't have been a big part of the plans. So if you want to talk about fitting ends and bringing the curtain down properly, I don't understand why that wouldn't be to have an opportunity to actually play in that last year, you know?
Yeah, I think it was just, it's a difficult one all around, isn't it? It's a difficult one to navigate. As we say, look, there will obviously be signings there with the aim to get that league title back, and ultimately, that's what Sean Russell will be judged on come the end of next season. So let's just see how things pan out. Dazzler, we're nearly there. What we do need is Richie Rankins. Even though I've had about 8 weeks off, I have come underprepared. So on the hop, I can give you a Richie Winter.
I have a Richie Winter straight away. One, isn't it?
Oh, I doubt it. I highly doubt it in this case. I'll give you mine first. My one is actually FIFA.
Oh dear.
And the draw. Did you watch the World Cup draw, Dazzler?
No.
It was both hilarious and tragic at the same time. Giving up or giving out make up peace awards and they had a terrible, terrible like drama thing with Rio Ferdinand, Wayne Gretzky, who couldn't pronounce the most basic countries. It was a complete and utter shit show from start to finish. It was one of those things where you're watching it like through your hands, you're going, oh no, 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 no. It's like two dogs going out on the side of the road. You know you shouldn't be looking, but it's hard not to.
Jesus. I stopped watching draws because I realized they're just a giant waste of time. I just need a tweet at the end that tells me who's playing who.
Yeah, oh, we're getting old, aren't we?
Yeah. Old and grumpy. I'm giving mine to my Richie Winter to Stephen Bradley. I saw he was out whinging again.
Is he ever not whinging?
He is the whingiest, moaniest man in Irish football. Like every single week, it's just, Christ, Stephen, you've won a double. You're playing in Europe. Like, is it really? Like, what are you getting from this? Like, what is the point? Spend your energy on something positive.
So my understanding of this is the dentist came out and said that he's looking into hosting like a camp basically in January, isn't it? For like domestic players and for like Americans, American-based Irish players, this type of thing. He used to do it with Iceland, found it very beneficial. So that went from that to Stephen Bradley saying he has no respect for managers in this country because he hasn't spoken to them about it and blah, 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 blah. Now, my first instinct was there's more than two clubs playing in this league who, like, obviously we've had a manic couple of months. The other clubs haven't. So you can be sure if he hosts one of these domestic things, you're going to have your, I'm sure your Dawson Devoys will be in there and all that. Yeah, all that type of people. Grant, no problem. Like, what's the big deal? But no, Mr. Bradley had to come out and moan and he hasn't spoken to any managers. It's disrespectful. Ah. Go away. Stop moaning.
But the great irony is Stephen Bradley talked about how frustrated he is about Hamer Hallgrimsson in the media and about how frustrating it is that Hamer talks about stuff in the media rather than to the managers. Would Stephen Bradley not text him and say, here, I would have appreciated a bit of a heads up. I don't think this is a great idea. No, instead he just waits to complain. Like, it just feels like he's always in a feud with someone about something.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
It's like a dull version of Vince McMahon. Just always has a problem with something.
The obligatory wrestling reference in there. It had to come at some stage.
It did.
Just seeing there, Gav Hodgins is signed for Wexford. It's very random. He's a real forgotten fucking Reds player, isn't he?
If you Google Gav Hodgins, there is some amazing, agent spoofery. From the same reporter, it has to be said, Gav's talking to Inter Milan, he's talking to Real Madrid or Liverpool are keen on Gav. And like, you just wonder, like, is this fella just come down on the last shower? Like, why would you write that shit?
Again, it's full of lunatics. The whole country's just full of loonies. Do you have anyone in particular you want to give a Richie Beggar to? Anyone who's...
I'm going to give it to Harry Wood because I think Harry's been under-recognised for his amazing season. I think he should have been in... He was in the mix for the 1895 Player of the Year and the 1895 Young Player of the Year, but I think he should have won one of them. No complaints with Kerr. He deserved to win the 1895 Player of the Year. And to be fair, so did Jess Gargan and Evian Clancy. Had a brilliant season. But Mackenzie Anthony scored an heap of goals and probably should have been in there. But definitely, I'm going to give my Richie Baker to Harry Wood. I'm not sure it's the kind of consolation he wants, or he'll even know, because I can't imagine he's listened to the podcast on match day. But Harry, I'm giving it to you.
Can you genuinely say you'd be surprised if Harry would listen to this on a match day? I would just be surprised if he listens to it at all, to be honest.
Yeah. That is true. I know he does. I think it's one of the few podcasts he does listen to.
Well, I'm honoured. I'm well and truly honoured. Dazzler, we're there. We're nearly at the hour. It's late. It's very, very late. But nevertheless, nice to be back.
Judy, I'll give you one line before I let you go. At the awards, I met backroom staff member's wife, and said, I recognise her voice from the podcast, and immediately I had a...
Oh, no.
I started replaying it. I was like, oh, what have I said? And then the first thing that came to me was, you're probably thinking of my brother. He says all...
Oh, yeah, there's nothing worse than that, especially if it's from somebody's partner or that. I recognise your voice. Oh, no, here we go. Another feud incoming.
Here we go. At some stage, Judy, when we're all retired and out of the official club podcast, I'll tell the story of the time I was accosted in the bar by someone from a management team way back when.
Oh, that's a great story. So good. So good.
We'll save it for the spin-off pod when it all goes down. Yeah.
Put it in the book. Dazzler, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Doody.
And we'll see everyone on Thursday.
Up the Reds.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.